We're talking about the power of sex transmutation. So if you find yourself not going out as much as you would like, if you are not in a relationship, there are ways to use that energy in very a positive, life-changing force, creative ways of taking where you are now and becoming the person that you want to be. And it doesn't mean, as Mitch Horowitz was saying last half hour, that it's a matter of just denying it or, running around trying not to think about, trying not to think about sex, trying not to think. It's a powerful, life-changing idea, and it's in the book. And there's more to it because we want to separate out the difference between that and sex magic, which was brought up by Ian on at Twitter. He contacted me at Deacon Punnett on Twitter. And thank you also to Jalapeno Princess and Geezer and the one and only Ed Weigel, too. Nice to hear from you. So we'll talk about that. We'll get to a couple of the other questions, and then we'll open up the lines at the bottom of the hour. But there's also another story in the news that made me think of Mitch Horowitz this week, and we'll get to all of that coming up next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So you make a point in the power of sex transmutation to differentiate this from sex magic from Aleister Crowley or other people who practice that. Explain that for people who may be thinking this is part of the same idea.
Sure. They're related, but they are different. I don't think Napoleon Hill received any influence from Aleister Crowley. And Crowley's method of sex magic was to basically think of something that you want at the moment of sexual climax. You also find a permutation of that in what we call chaos magic today. So it's basically using the act of sexual climax as some sort of psychical engine that will help promote your wishes out into the world. Hill's practice is different. There's not an actual act of climax going on. You're doing it in private. You're using your mind just to shift your thoughts, to shift your mental posture, so to speak, from satisfying your sexual desire towards channeling your sexual desire in another direction. The two are related, but they are different.
But I think this speaks to this other question about where people's wishes are these days and how we are feeling, I think, disunified. If we have ever been together as a United States, we're feeling less like that, every poll would seem to indicate. And I think people want a feeling of it being able to be in conversation even with people with whom they disagree, except online, of course, where nobody's interested in that. But in neighborhoods and other places where this sort of sense of being torn apart seems to be pervasive in so many stories, how do you as somebody who appreciates the truer sense of what a cult means, how do you look at the news these days?
I think that one of the things we have lost as a nation is a sense of universal reciprocity. We are all part of one whole. If I do something to humiliate or to insult another person, there's no way that that's not coming back to me. That is going to reverberate back to me because all of life ultimately emanates from one source. Some people might call it karma. I call it cosmic reciprocity. You can call it the golden rule. It's very real and it's very actual. And I always say to people that if you want to ennoble your life, if you want to feel better about yourself, if you want to conduct yourself with more confidence, don't engage in trash talk. Abstain from it for just 1 hour. 1 hour and see what happens. Because hostile sarcasm, trash talk, gossip, put downs have become so much a part of our day-to-day life, online and off, but mostly online. It degrades us in ways that we don't see. We take on the traits of things that we throw stones at. We become what we don't forgive. And I will tell the individual, if you don't want to do it for some squishy moral reason, do it for reasons of building up your own self. You will feel stronger and better and more noble if you abstain from trash talk.
That's a really interesting idea, and it speaks to something that I think there's a duality to our existence that has been heightened in the last 10, 15 years, where people seem to have empowered their avatar, their online avatar,
Yes.
this projection of their inner rage. And And so it can be from the left and the right. I get it from both on Twitter and for different reasons, right? I mean, and what interests me is that people come at it with all these presumptions about what they think they know about you, and you know they don't know anything about me, but they think they do. And but they have, it's almost like something from Harry Potter. It's almost like a Patronus or something where they've got some thing that if they had to put their real name and their real face next to their comment, they wouldn't do it.
Ian, you
If they
nailed
had to
it.
re
You just
right
nailed it.
if they had to see their neighbors and the expression on the face of their boss or their coworkers for something that they said online, they wouldn't do it. But it's they've become completely liberated to live in this duality, and it's sort of this very negative second life that they're living online that I think has gotten out of control.
You have nailed it completely. We have been disinhibited in all the wrong ways, and we say things to people online, very often anonymously, that we would never say to somebody's face. And it's almost like we've created these counter doppelgangers of ourselves online that are rude, that are hostily sarcastic, that make wild leaps of assumption, things that we think we know about other people. And generally, face to face or even over the phone, these aren't things that we would say. And it's unhealthy. It tears us in two and it degrades us because I really do believe that when we insult or put down or direct hostile sarcasm towards another person, those traits begin to enact themselves in us. It's a kind of auto-suggestion. The things that we say and think about other people, good or ill, enact themselves in us. This is not a neutral game that we're playing. It's a very dangerous game that I believe can harm our own lives.
I'm reminded of a kid in my neighborhood who picked up a terrible stutter, a stammer that they carried with them well into adulthood, but that started because they were mocking another kid who was a stutterer.
No kidding.
And then they developed it themselves and
You know, it's said the moral arc of the universe is long, but eventually it bends toward justice. And I do believe that. It's just another way of restating karma or cosmic reciprocity.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea on karmic reciprocity. But when you say that, some people will go, well, this is America, and they put a big emphasis on this is my right to say this. And I think they confuse the two ideas. You know, it's your right to say something about the government, but it doesn't mean that we have some right to say whatever we want about anybody else without any repercussions. And
Oh,
I
for
think this is
sure.
we've gotten carried away with this notion about, I mean, in every TV show and every Maury and every, you know, there's just everybody's just constantly getting in everybody's grill. Like that is somehow an expression of who they are, and you can't tell them to not do that because, gosh darn it, then you're repressing them in their full expression of their First Amendment rights or something.
Yeah, I'm always pointing out to people there's legality and there's ethics. In terms of legality, sure, say whatever you want. I'm not going to stop you. It is your right. But in terms of ethics, think again, because you're always at a crossroads. And if you humiliate somebody, including online, it's for real. There's a real flesh and blood person towards whom you're directing that. And I believe ultimately you're enacting the same thing in yourself. Of course, legally, you can't just say anything either. I mean, your guest earlier was pointing out that the flat earth guy cannot just threaten people with a crossbow. Hopefully he's just joking around. Let's knock on wood. But you can't make terroristic threats either. So even in the area of legality, there are some limits. But don't think in terms of legality, I tell people. Think in terms of ethics. Would you want somebody to say that about your mother, about your dad, about yourself? Think in terms of ethics.
We're talking with Mitch Horowitz, the author of The Power of Sex Transmutation. He also wrote The Miracle Club. He is a writer in residence at the New York Public Library, which I think means you just never leave, right?
I do get out once in a while,
You never
once a
leave.
night.
They're like, no,
They
he's
let me
still
out on
here.
weekends. Yeah, they're very nice about
That's very nice. They let you bring a bag in and like a Coleman, keep stuff warm. So your work here, and I want to quote from a page here that you have about something because it reminded me of a positive story that I saw. There's a commercial that's running right now for Hershey's, and it's about a guy in a neighborhood who gives Hershey bars to everybody in the neighborhood. Now he's a senior, and that's what he's known for. And he always gives all the kids a piece, and the parents know him. There's nothing creepy about it. It's kind of sweet. And I was reminded of this part where you talk about, where at least Napoleon Hill was talking about these the impulses and the force of life itself seeking expression. That we all knew somebody, or at least I think we all knew somebody growing up who might have been what at the time was called a spinster aunt, you know, or somebody, an unmarried cousin or somebody who then spent their life becoming that part of the community that everybody depended on, who was the first person to bag sand if floodwaters were coming, or was the first person to volunteer to paint the fence in the Little League park. You know what I mean? And there was those people out there that had that way of redirecting all of that energy that they might have had in their family or for other things into very positive contributions.
Oh, absolutely. I think you see it in scholars. I think you see it in Good Samaritans. I think you see it in salesmen. I think you see it in all kinds of people. There are people who have a certain energy to provide life to others. Sometimes this is a matter of commerce or finance. Sometimes, as you were just describing, it's a matter of being a good human being, of being a good Samaritan. But that enthusiasm to propagate life, I think, is this universal life force that exists within all of us.
And that speaks directly to when, if somebody were not going to be having a robust sex life because of choices that either they made or had been made for them, that they can still, that doesn't mean a part of them has to shrivel and die. It just means it can be redirected into an area from which everybody would be able to draw from.
Oh, absolutely. And I want people to feel happy about that and positive about that. And if somebody does have a robust sex life, whether they're married or unmarried, this material is still completely usable. It's not as if this universal life force is a resource that we're going to run out of.
Sure.
It's not some kind of irreplaceable resource, or it's not something that dwindles like time through an hourglass. It's part of life, like hunger itself. It's a natural part of life. So if somebody has a robust sex life, they don't have to abstain from that or change that. It's just a question of making a decision at certain private moments to use sexuality in a different way, in a goal-oriented way.
Yeah, I like that. It really is. It's a simple read. It's easy to follow, but you have a lot in there to work with for people who are interested in the power of sex transmutation. And for fans of Napoleon Hill, you know, there are you mentioned sales earlier, and that's come up a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you also talked about miracles. And these are two things I'm very interested in. I don't do sales for a living, but it does require, and I just, the reason why I don't do it maybe is I don't have that deep a well.
Yes. Yes.
For rejection and for going out and making connections and patiently waiting for things to come through. And God bless the people who can, because that is a tough road.
Right on. You know, in my book, The Miracle Club, I have a section called A Prayer for Salesmen.
Yeah.
I have tremendous respect for salesmen because they have to put themselves through so much rejection, so many phone calls, and they have to bring it every single time. And they're a vital part of the economy. They don't get enough respect. They pay for kids to go to school. They pay for people's health care. They are the connection between people who invent products and people who need them. And I think the salesperson deserves a great deal of respect because it is one tough job, and it's a necessary job. So when you meet a salesperson who seems to exude magnetism or enthusiasm, according to the theory we're talking about, that's also a transmuted sex energy, and that can help the individual who's in that job.
My father-in-law never gave me much in the way of wisdom, but he told me never spend too much money on beer. That was the first thing he ever told me.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah, I didn't drink, so it really wasn't that helpful. But anyway, the other thing he did tell me, and I thought this was really great. We were having a conversation once, and I confessed to this. We were talking about my future, and I was sort of looking down my nose at the idea of doing sales, and he kind of lit into me a little bit, and he said, you know, he wasn't a salesman by trade, but he said, everybody does sales.
Yeah.
And in our economy, to some degree, everybody is in sales. And he laid it out all down the line, and all the jobs that you would never think of as having a sales component, of course, do. And we just have to kind of get over that as being something Willy Loman-esque that we couldn't possibly think we were ever going to do.
For real, for real. And again, you know, my heart and my intellect goes out to every salesperson in this country, because whatever they're selling, whether it's business to business, whether it's to individual consumers, insurance, not only are they a vital part of the economy, but it's a tough job, and they simply don't receive enough in the way of recognition. And I think we have to start to get around that.
Yeah, I do. There was a piece I finished earlier this week about miracles. So that was the other thing I wanted to address to you before we go to the phones. And we'll give the numbers coming up just a minute so everybody else can join into the conversation. But I've been participating in a book that will go to print coming up later on this fall for Roman and Littlefield. The book is about it's about Moses. And it's told, I co-wrote the book with an Israeli-born rabbi and a Pakistani-born Muslim scholar. And everybody brings their perspectives on Moses to the book. And it's very compelling because it's about leadership, right, in times of tyrants. And about what Moses had to face. And some of it has to do with sales, and some of it has to do with overcoming adversity. But there was one thing at one point that stuck with me, and that's that times of great flux require people with strong, innovative leadership skills to move toward a new stability.
Wow.
And I think that's where we are right now. We're in a great time of flux, and we need to get maybe to some new form of stability. I just can't imagine quite what that looks like. Do you have a thought on that?
It's fascinating observation, because with the approach of the 2020 election, there's a lot of energy that's going to be unleashed. And, you know, people are going to vote how they're going to vote, and they all have their reasons for it. But we are going to be in a massive state of flux, and that is going to present us with hazards and with tremendous opportunities. People who have visions, people who have ideas, are going to find a wave that they can ride, because when that kind of energy is unleashed, things can break in all kinds of directions. So the fact that you are producing a book on how Moses provided leadership at a time of chaos, at a time of massive instability, is incredibly important, because let's face it, we are going to be entering that. People are going to make their decisions. But people are also going to be looking for solutions for restoration. And people who have some ideas are going to find tremendous energy at their backs.
Yeah, I think one of the energy that we drew on for this was the idea that the Moses story is told in the Quran and in the Bible, and they're pretty close.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, and they really, if people think of it as really, you know, all these two things are totally different, or they're heading, and they're not. They converge on so much that I think that's where we kept drawing our energy from, was all of the agreement, not the forces that would attempt to pull us apart, but all the things that bind us together. And that other thing where I'm looking at, Mitch, and I'd love to have your thought on it, is the generations that are changing. We just have this new generation coming online, this Generation Z, that's just coming into, you know, early adulthood, just coming into the workforce. Millennials are going to be they're going to be a majority of the workforce here very soon. Baby boomers are on the way out. And that's a whole nother way of looking at energy, I think, when we look at generational energy. Do you encounter that much?
Oh, tremendously so, tremendously so. I mean, the next generation that's coming up is not exactly a generation of joiners. You know, they tend to do things at more of a digital remove. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a different way of doing business. But we have to be really cautious, because when you do things at a digital remove, as we were talking about earlier, you don't always take into account there's a flesh and blood human being at the other end of whatever it is you're expressing, including ghosting people on text or something.
Right.
Ghosting people is one of the worst, most abusive things that you can do in our digital culture. If a Generation Z person asked me how to live, if they were interested in my point of view, I would say, you can abstain from that one thing, and you'll make it a better world.
Love that. All right, so all the numbers you need to join the conversation with Mitch Horowitz, and then we'll go to open lines coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. You can link up to Mitch Horowitz just by going to coasttocoastam.com. Follow the links from there for all of his works. You can also go to amazon.com and just buy the lot of them. East of the Rockies, Dan is in Virginia on Coast to Coast. Dan?
Hello there. My goodness, by the way, George Norrie knows me as Dan, the blind man of the angels, and I've called the show since 2003, and thank you so much, Ian, for being here, too. I have a quick comment and then a question. The comment is, Mitch, if you will add to your transmutation thing there, if you will add in thank you and gratitude and then curve it around so it becomes a loop, and then you power it by the heartbeat, and you see, then this will help people be a little more comfortable about it all. Do you see what I mean?
I do. That is a brilliant comment. I love what you're saying.
Okay, now here's the question. Did you know that back in the May 22nd, 2011 Joplin tornado, that when I and other artists were almost killed and we had so many thousands of our works destroyed, that and we wanted to help the people get them off drugs, did you know that we talked about your topic with the FEMA people about transmuting the sexual energy over into other aspects of our lives? Did you know that was our topic that we did?
I'm thrilled to hear that.
Yeah,
what did FEMA have to say about that? What was FEMA's reaction?
They loved that. I was their honorary artist. They let me build sculptures on the outside of the FEMA trailer, even though it broke the rules.
Wow.
Very good. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. That was very interesting. West of the Rockies, Mike is in Reno on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Yeah, a little similar to the last comment, Mitch. I know this is thousands of years old. I know you studied yoga. Similar statements are in Patanjali. But again, like the last caller, we have terrible addictions in this country, the opiate addiction, here gambling addiction, food addiction. You know, I wonder if you could maybe, I know you're busy, but if this could help these people. I know what you think it's simple, this technique, but to cure all these addictions or to try maybe a lecture series, another book on this. One more comment, Mitch. If there's anybody who doesn't need propping up in this capitalist country, it's salesmen. We have a shortage of nurses in this state, a shortage of teachers in this state. They're both teachers are disrespected, underpaid. Medical personnel, these giving professions are the ones that need propping up. And I got a comment for you, Ian, that you might not like.
Mike, I'm going to put you on hold because I want to challenge that thought. Nobody is making a choice between the two of those, so that's a false equivalency, and I don't think that's fair to say that we're choosing salesmen over nurses or teachers or anything like that. In fact, I think it's great we have all sorts of days that celebrate nurses and teachers. When was the last time you saw a National Salesman's Day? Or where somebody, you know, where the joke wasn't at the salesman's expense? So, I mean, I think that's really what we're talking about. And I think we're talking about the engine of the economy, which benefits nurses and teachers and everybody else. It's not a matter of having to choose between the two. We could do that all day long. We could say, well, firemen are more important than custodians, or we could, but why? It's not a matter of that. It's just a matter of saying, you know, it's important that salespeople get recognized for what a difficult job that is. And in this case, it was just a matter of sort of feeling like we can help them find some new energy. I don't see anything wrong with that, but you're welcome to contact me through Twitter, and I look forward to your comment, Mike. Bill is in Washington State on Coast to Coast for Mitch Horowitz. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, hey, Ian. Hey, Mitch. I just want to start out with something I thought was a little humorous. The whole time you were drawing the analogy of working on your, or putting your energy into your guitar, your sexual energy into your guitar work, for some reason, I kept thinking of the song by George Harrison, Why My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yes, I can understand.
I have no idea why.
Well, it's fair enough. I'd like to think I could ever be that good, so I'd like to think of it too, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and my question is this. Okay, given current events, all right, I'm thinking of, like, the NXIVM cult or whatever, where Alice and Mac got caught up in that. And then there's this violence being done by incels. And then, of course, we've all heard, you know, about Jeffrey Epstein and what happened there. I am skeptical, a little bit skeptical, if this is really a responsible thing. Now, I know what you're saying is to, in a way, to prevent that sort of exploitation, to prevent that sort of violence. But at the same time, I mean, I worry about society. I mean, you know, how do you know they won't use this
That's an interesting thought, that people who have negative sexual energy already, if they redirected that through sex transmutation, then that negative sexual energy from the, you know, whether it's the NXIVM guy or you know, Jeffrey Epstein or other people like that, what evil genius could they possibly be working on if they to transmutate that? That's a very interesting thought.
Yeah, these are great questions. And, you know, just a quick shout out to the previous caller. I do believe that this material can be used to address opioid addiction and other addictions, to cultivate stronger personality traits. And this caller raises a very good question. Ethics is at the center of everything I do in terms of magic and my work with the esoteric. I believe very strongly in the wholeness of human life, whether you call it karma or reciprocity. And the truth is, we face ethical decisions at every crossroads of life, whether it's something ordinary and material, or whether it's something that deals with more esoteric or psychical matters, like what we're talking about here. And listen, people do need to find a sense of personal agency in their life. They need to find a way to get places, to accomplish the things that they wish to do. That can go in a negative direction when people are unethical, when they step over other people, or when they get involved in some sort of a cult. But what I'm trying to prescribe is a method, a tool that everybody can use in private. They don't have to join anything. They don't have to put any label on themselves. But right. They do have to be aware that life reverberates, and what we put out there comes back to us. These things exist. They've always been with humanity. They've always been tools in our cosmic tool chest, so to speak, and we face ethical decisions all the time, and I take all that very strongly, and I write quite a bit about that in the book, actually, because it's hugely important this energy be used in a responsible way, just as it's important that any physical energy be used in a responsible way.
Thomas is in La Jolla on Coast to Coast for Mitch Horowitz. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you, Deacon, for taking my call. Mitch, I love your book, Miracle Club, and a contemporary of Napoleon Hill was Neville Goddard.
Sure.
And you do audio readings of his books. And he talks about what he calls, quote, the creative act, unquote.
Yes.
And Neville Goddard appears to imply that every story in the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, is about the implementation of the, quote, the creative act, unquote. And is this the same as your concept of energy transmutation with Napoleon Hill?
That's a wonderful question, and I believe the two are related. Neville taught that the human imagination is the great creator, that everything that happens to us, everything that we experience, is our own emotionalized thoughts and mental pictures pushed out into the world. And when we imagine something with the real ideal of actualizing it, of making it real, Neville compared that to the sexual act. He said it was a mental sexual act, not a physical sexual act, a mental sexual act, where we impregnate the psyche or the subconscious with an idea. And over time, there will be a period of gestation, just as there is for any life, and that mental idea with which we have impregnated the subconscious or the psyche will eventually come to gestation and come to pass in the world. So Neville very much used the same concept. I think that's a very perceptive observation.
That's a very interesting comment as well about creativity. Joe is in the Bronx on Coast to Coast for Mitch Horowitz. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
New Yorker, all right.
Good, yeah. Mitch, yeah, I write music. I'm a lyricist mostly, but I play some keyboards as well. I'm wondering now, taking the idea of sex transmutation and redirecting sexual energy mm-hmm. toward music, I know there's a link between music and sex.
Yeah.
but substituting, say, sexual expression for music, or infusing music with that sexual expression, mm-hmm. How is that a viable outlet for, you know, indulging in music rather than sex?
Oh, I think it's definitely a viable outlet. But remember, you don't have to substitute one for the other. You're not forced to choose. It's just a question of, at certain moments, if you're writing a song or whatever it may be you're engaged in, you're rehearsing, you can make a conscious decision to shift the sexual desire that you feel in the direction of the creative act you're performing, and you can put tremendous natural forces behind that. That doesn't mean that you're choosing one for the other. The act of satisfying the sexual urge could occur some other time, but there are also times where you dedicate it to the creative task.
It's very well put. Thank you. Bernie is in Fort Myers on Coast to Coast for Mitch Horowitz. Bernie?
Good evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes,
Mitch,
sir.
You were talking about ethics. You talked about sales. And you talked about ethics crossroads. Everything I heard about ethics was, you know, you talk about ethics and doing this and doing the, you know, the right thing. The difference between ethics and morals, however, and that's where you want to look at morality as well. The difference between the two is ethics is knowing that what you have on your mind is wrong, but you do it. Morals is knowing it's wrong and not doing it. So when you reach that crossroads, I think that's where you're going, is between ethics and morality, if I'm not, you know, mistaken.
That's an interesting definition.
Sure. I view ethics as morality taken to the road, taken to the streets. When I say ethics, I'm not eliminating or obfuscating morality. I mean ethics is a code that the individual lives by. There may be a moral impulse, a conscience, but ethics is what happens when I live it out. That's the way I use it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my point. But being an ethical person, okay, you can say you're an ethical person, but, you know, a lot of people do. I hate to say attorneys and pigeonhole ethics, but, you know, you sit there and you know it's really not right, but you're doing it because you're getting paid for it. But if you are
wait a second.
Say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, but there are professional ethics. Right. And I think that's something we should point out, that there are professional ethics, which once you agree to be a part of a guild or you sign on to be part of a particular governmental body, or, you know, because I mean, we would all say that lying is wrong and it's fine. But if you're a spy, it would be unethical for you to tell the truth if it meant getting somebody else killed. So, I mean, I think that it's important to say that there are times when, for attorneys, for example, and I understand, I share your frustration that there's lots of times when attorneys do when it's ethical by the standards of the bar, but are immoral by standards of society. But I do think that we should be mindful of being too strong in the way we blur those two lines. That's all.
Well, you know, what you're talking about with ethics, that's not a societal thing, really. That's a personal situation. For an example, okay, myself, I've always found that if they ask you a question, you tell them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple, because once you do that, now it's up to them to deal with, not you. But the minute you lie, you've got to deal with that forever and a day, because you can't remember what you said last. There's only one truth.
True.
You see, that's why I do that. I'll tell you whether you like it or not. If you're afraid of the answer, don't ask. And I'll do that because then the person I tell it to has to deal with it. Getting down to sales. You said sales was hard. I've been in it for a long time. And I'll tell you, it's very easy, really. I learned, you know, when I started out in sales, I was a salesman, absolutely a salesman. I didn't care about anything but getting that order. As I evolved and grew older, Okay, I'm on Social Security now, so I'm, you know, I've been around the block in this field a few, you know, a couple of times, and I got my nose bloodied quite a few. But I found out that it's better to be a marketer, and you do relationship building. And when you do that, then you earn the trust of the person you're doing, but you don't mess with, you know, you don't lie to them for the sake of, there we go, this is back to ethics. You don't lie to them just to get the sale.
Well, and I would agree that more. I would agree that good sales, for good salespeople, sales is easy. You have a thought on that, Mitch? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Mitch? You know, listen, I worked in publishing for many, many years, and I was always pointing out to my colleagues that when you're writing advertising copy in a book, in a catalog, on the back of a book, it is an advertisement, but you must tell the truth because you will be caught out if you don't tell the truth. Make a bold promise, but back up the bold promise. That's what I love about the pioneers of self-help, people like Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie. They made bold promises, but they backed up their promises. So I believe very strongly in transparency. Tell the truth, be brave, but be transparent.
Yeah, and I think it would only be fair to mention that there are many more people who tried to do sales who couldn't than the people like Bernie who were very successful at it. I do too. Steve is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Yes, sir. Just to go with what you was just talking about, and not trying to be that biblical, but my favorite scripture in the Bible is that whatever a man sows, the same shall he reap. So you can't sow thorns and expect to get a corn crop.
Right. That's a good way of, again, of looking at how we were talking about
right. The second thing is that Jesus says was, if you're ever invited to a big meeting at the master's table, don't assume nothing. You stand back there in the back. And he says, and I know you know enough about the Bible that what I'm telling you rings true. He says, if you're called up front, that will be a great thing. But if you go up front and they ask you to move back,
right,
you're kind of embarrassed. So take the lowly place and ask to become to the front place.
We'll have to leave it there as we come to the top of the hour, but thank you, and anybody else who wants to hang on, we'll get to you for open lines. Mitch Horowitz, I think you opened up a lot of minds tonight and got them to rethink perhaps a subject which they're not likely to bring up around other people, but need to reconsider on repurposing sexual energy. So thank you. Next time I'm in New York, will we share a cup of coffee in your residence over at New York Public Library?
Sounds terrific, my man. Look forward to it.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. I will block out the afternoon because I have a feeling we would just be getting started. Well, thank you so much for what Mitch did to get us started, but it doesn't have to go that way, too. That's the whole thing about open lines. Where are you going to take us? We'll get to that coming up next. All the numbers you need on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.